If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gabe. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we have a really interesting conversation with Bridget Reed. Bridget is a New York Magazine writer who also just published a book called Little Bosses Everywhere, How the Pyramid Scheme Shaped America. Bridget is also a lifelong friend of mine. She is really good friends with my older brother. I've known her for forever, and she's been on the show before. Bridget has covered a lot of different topics throughout her career, and she wrote this incredible kind of cast profile of Vanderpump Rules for Vogue back in 2018. If you listen to her episode of Gabbing with Gabe from last year, you'll hear all about it because we talked in depth about that and sort of the status of Vanderpump Rules back then. And, you know, it was sort of this landmark piece for Bravo because up until then, the network hadn't gotten that much sort of like highbrow coverage and sort of profiles like that in publications like Vogue. And now, you know, we see people featured in the New York Times and Vogue and different kind of really highbrow outlets like that all the time. Back then, it wasn't really happening. And so I remember Bridget's piece came out, and then the next year was the first BravoCon, and we sort of buddied around together during that BravoCon. And, you know, that was just a really important piece for the network. And anyway, so all that to say is that Bridget very much knows what she's talking about, particularly when it comes to this Vanderpump Valley world. And so I wanted to have her on to, you know, do some promo for the book. And we talked a little bit about her book and the concept of MLMs as they intersect with pop culture and with Bravo, which I didn't really know much about, to be honest. And also when I went to a book launch event for Bridget last week, you know, I got to thinking about sort of whether there were any similarities between MLM and sort of the culture around that and reality TV at all. And, you know, I need to be clear that I'm not equating being a reality star with being part of an MLM. That's very different. And but you know, part of Bridget's book is arguing that MLMs and sort of the structure and the strategy behind them and how they sort of rope people into them, she argues partially that that helps explain sort of like the current political, you know, climate in America too, and sort of the rise of Donald Trump as well. And so like part of her thesis is just sort of like connecting all of that, all of this stuff. And it's really kind of well put together. And anyway, I was curious if any of that could connect to Bravo or reality TV, just like kind of overall culturally or sort of, you know, getting into the ground floor kind of thing. So we had a really interesting conversation, and sort of the first 15 minutes or so is all about that. And then we jumped into just talking straight up about the Valley and the different couples and the latest from those. So I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. Bridget is super smart. She knows what she's talking about. Also, before we jump into the conversation, just a heads up, for some reason, during my recording with Bridget, there was like a 2 to 3 minute period where for some reason, my mic on Zoom connected to my headphones, which sounds terrible. away from my microphone, but then it connected back to the microphone. Anyway, TMI, but there was a 2 to 3 minute portion where my audio is pretty wonky. You can still hear what I'm saying, but just know that when you get to that part, it is just 2 or 3 minutes and the rest of it is back to normal. I just have to flag that up top so you know that I'm aware that it is weird and I can't explain why. But yeah, just FYI. And so keep listening for my chat with Bridget Reed. Check out her book, Little Bosses Everywhere, How the Pyramid Scheme Shaped America, wherever you get your books. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. See you next week. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Bridget Reed, who is a features writer at New York Magazine. She is the author of the recently released and extremely well-reviewed book, Little Bosses Everywhere, How the Pyramid Scheme Shaped America. Bridget is a lifelong friend of mine. I'm thrilled to welcome her back to the podcast. Bridget, how are you?
I'm so good. I'm so happy to be here on this rainy Wednesday.
Very rainy. Are you basking in post-release week glow? Because it's made me so proud just seeing just how much amazing coverage the book has gotten. It's been really incredible.
It's been really wonderful. It's so nice to finally have it out there and be able to talk about it. Working on a book is so much longer and more isolating than an article. I started the book in 2021, so it's crazy. Just been great to hear from people. And so many people have been touched by multi-level marketing schemes, and I'm constantly hearing from those people too. So that's been really rewarding.
Yeah, and you were also part of the press cycle for the book was Bartending on Watch What Happens Live. The episode aired a couple nights ago with Melissa Rivers and a guy from Below Deck. What was that like? Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was a wonderful addition to my press roundup. And yep. I loved that I got to do, you know, the Washington Post, New York Times, NPR, and then Watch What Happens Live, you know, another, just an incredibly well-rounded.
Absolutely. High, low, all the things. You have to cover all your bases.
Yes. So that was really fun. And I don't know, you've done it before, right?
Not solo like that. I've been I did the Halloween episode and then I did one other thing, but I can't remember what it was. But no, I've never done it solo like you did.
Okay. So solo, you really are behind the guests. So it's kind of incredibly awkward, but in this really funny way, because, you know, obviously you're there on camera. They tell you to be ready for you to, you know, you have to react. You have to be ready to be on camera, but they also tell you you'll barely be spoken to, which was great for me because I wanted to just enjoy it. And Andy came over and we chatted a bit about New York Magazine and we kind of kiki'd a little. So that was nice. But mostly I was just sort of by myself and my twin sister, Casey, who you know very well, sat in the front row. So she was sort of, we were reacting to each other because literally no one else in the studio, none of the guests nor Andy really looks at you or sees you. You're just kind of perched over watching them. So that was really funny. And I had so much adrenaline that I had one margarita. And by the end, I just was wasted. So tipsy. Yeah. But it was great.
But you had a great little moment, though, because I also feel like, you know, the bartender can get the one question from Andy, right? And it's sometimes they're not ready and sometimes they kind of flub it. But you took your moment and he asked you which Bravo celebrity would be most likely to run a pyramid scheme. And you, without hesitation, said Jax Taylor. So I chuckled.
Yes.
It's great.
You know, and since then, one of my friends who watches said I should have said Stassi because Stassi is so much more organized and powerful and powerfully organized. And that's actually probably true. So I think that maybe have been a better answer. I think Jax is really, can really turn on the charm, which is key to running a pyramid scheme, but in terms of execution, if I was starting one, I would recruit Stassi first for sure.
Stassi would run the tight ship, and she is kind of a Svengali figure in some ways. You know what I mean? She is that. She does have a cult following, I would say too.
Yes, you need a guru, and she certainly could be the guru. So Stassi, if you need to pivot, call me. I know how to do it by now.
Before we go back into Bravo, I'm curious because I feel like MLMs have had a couple of big kind of breakthrough sort of zeitgeisty pop culture adjacent moments in the past several years. I feel like particularly like in the streaming post-COVID era, like there's been a couple document. I think of Lula Rich, the one about the leggings.
Yep.
But I feel like there have been a couple moments like that over the past like 4 or 5 years where they really kind of burst onto the scene for like a moment. Did any of those pique your interest into this topic? Like did any of those moments sort of help, I don't know, were you paying attention to those moments as you were doing research for your book?
Definitely. And, you know, I used to work for The Cut at New York Mag.
Right.
And when I started the book, I was working at The Cut. And so those documentaries and, you know, there's a podcast called The Dream that's fantastic.
Yes, very good.
There was a show with Kirsten Dunst and Alexander Skarsgård called On Becoming a God in Central Florida, which takes place in the 80s. It's so good. It was on Showtime. It was canceled after the pandemic, but it's loosely about Amway, which is one of the old companies that's still around. Very powerful. But anyway, so all of those were sort of coinciding with also a lot of cultural sort of metabolizing of like the girl boss and corporate feminism and this idea
right.
that like, oh, we've peaked and women are going to the moon. You know, now that's happening. But that conversation was really everywhere kind of right before the pandemic. And then when the pandemic happened and so many women lost their jobs and were sent home, there was this crisis of, you know, oh, my God, have we really made it that far? Have we really progressed? Do we need, you know, has feminism won? Has it worked? And then combine that with multi-level marketing got a little boom because it really relies on like the pitch that you could stay at home and care for your kids and do this like low paid, you know, flexible work. So yes, I definitely have read and watched and listened to all of that. And I'm really obsessed with scams. And then there are people that have been talking about multiple marketing for decades. Because
right.
what you'll learn in the book is that, you know, multiple marketing is almost 80 years old. It was invented by men. And so much of its controversial past actually persists. And there's a lot of evidence out there that most, if not all, multiple marketing companies are pyramid schemes. And so my book really just tries to like definitively answer that question. And for anybody that's interested in scams and that girl bossy scamminess, there's so much of that, but also like digging into kind of the politics and sociology of where MLM comes from. And then I went to a Mary Kay convention and wore
Which
a floral dress
wild.
Around
yeah.
a Dallas, you know, convention center for 3 days. So that was
right.
fun.
Right. You had this amazing book event last week and you were talking about how basically 99% of the people who get involved in MLM, they lose a lot of money, not just like not recoup their investment. Like they actively kind of like go into debt for these companies. And while you were talking about that, Bridget, I was like, huh, there is a little bit of there's a difference that I'll get to, but I feel like there's a little bit of a similarity in terms of like a first season housewife where you don't get paid that much money, mm-hmm. right? Like your paycheck's pretty small compared to like what a long running person's making. And you have to pay for the glam and you have to pay for some of your events. And there's a lot of expenses in that first season that I've heard women say, like, I lost money on my first season. And obviously the hope is that like you get 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons down the road. And like a lot of them do get that and they start making a lot of money and that they do recoup yeah. the investment. But I'm curious if you have ever thought about that comparison at all. Because again, there's a difference because I think the ratio of who makes money on this is very different. But I don't know, that just popped into my head when you were talking at your book event last week.
I love that. That's so brilliant. What a genius connection. You really are our like scholar.
Stop.
You know, like that's so smart. You know, of course you're right that there is a difference because part of what the book is about is whether MLM is fraud because the promoters lie to the participants about their actual possibility of making money. And, you know, Bravo, when you sign a contract, you know, I'm sure Bravo is upfront about what they'll cover
right.
and your, you know, your possibilities that you might not make it another season. But in terms of the aspirational lifestyle projection, that is a huge part of being a housewife. And, you know, it's funny, these MLM promoters who really advertise themselves like quite out there on Instagram, if you figure out who is like an upline in a MLM, they'll never say on their profile which one they work for. They'll always say like, I'm a mentor, I'm a moneymaker, I help moms work from home, work from Wi-Fi. But if you figure it out, you can watch them. I mean, they promote just like a housewife, you know, and they're constantly on vacations and they're wearing clothes and cars and it's all about that. And from the very beginning, MLM promoters would like show up to events driving Cadillacs and they would encourage you to buy a Cadillac, even if you went into debt for the Cadillac, because the whole point is it'll help sell the opportunity and people will join and eventually you'll pay off the Cadillac. So that kind of materialism and that, like, you know, MLM is all about transcending your class position and getting a lot of money, getting rich quick. And certainly housewives from the very beginning, from the day those gates, thank God they opened in Orange County, you know, it has been about class transformation. And that was, that group of women was, they were a striving group of women. They were comfortable, but they always wanted more. You know, Vicky is a business owner, Gina, they were all selling houses. Like, that has always been, I think, in the DNA of housewives. You know, when we got to New York, when we got to Beverly Hills, we were maybe in a bit of a higher echelon, you know, where they have a lot of money and many of those women probably didn't even need to work. But I think at its core, Housewives has always been about women who are working, you know, who are entrepreneurial.
Right. Totally.
And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of connection with what you said.
Yeah. I had a mailbag episode earlier this week and like one of the questions was actually about sort of like aspiration versus relatability when it comes to housewives. And like, I think a lot.
I listened and your answer was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. But I just think that like, that's, I do think that aspiration, like you said, is very core and I don't think they should ever abandon that. I don't think they ever will, but like, I don't know. That is at the crux of it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the idea that like you could all be a Bethany and that everybody has the equal opportunity to just create this product that will set you up for life. That really is an MLM. It's about like getting in at the right time and you can build a whole team that will set you up for life. So it's not the same because they all are selling the same product, which is what another reason it's like makes no sense as a business model because you're competing with your own team members. Like it's crazy. Totally. But that idea that the platform, if you get the platform and you're good enough that you can set yourself up and you can have this passive income where then you can be like the lifestyle and you don't have to stand in the Whole Foods selling your cookies anymore. That's very much the same.
Right. You can be the MLM and housewives. Right. Yeah, totally.
Right. Totally. Yes. Yes.
So does MLM, does this idea like actually intersect with Bravo and Housewives ever? Like, I mean, you sent me a link earlier this week and I didn't do my research because we just hopped onto this call, but have housewives or any Bravo celebrities like been involved in this stuff?
Yes, they definitely have.
Okay.
And I will say that actually Jen Shah, the sort of ring that she went down for of this financial scam that primarily targeted the elderly, it wasn't technically multi-level marketing, but it definitely had this like recruitment element where people were making money off of how many people they brought into the scam.
Got it.
And I don't think it was MLM specifically because they all weren't coming in as distributors. Like in MLM, you're ostensibly selling a product, but how you really make your money is you're recruiting people who are buying the product too. Like everyone's buying. And everyone in MLM has to buy every month, buy products. Anyway, but at Jen Shah, there was an element of like people were, you know, making commissions off of how many of those old people they were bringing in. And I think if they brought in a salesperson that was also particularly good at doing that, they were making some commissions. So,
right.
Yeah, it had a bit of a like pyramid structure. From the, I read all those court documents in the complaint years ago because I'm a nerd. But the thing I recently sent you was Teresa Giudice had come under fire for doing some promo for a company called Make Wellness.
Okay.
And they are certainly an MLM. I haven't dug too much into it, but they're definitely an MLM and they use the MLM model. So these are women who are encouraged to buy product packs. They can range from like a less than $100 to several hundred dollars. And ostensibly you can sell those products, but really you're going to make higher commissions off of other women under you buying those products. Make Wellness. If you Google it, there are some people out there who have had negative experiences with Make Wellness. And so I can't speak to it specifically, but I do think it's so funny. MLM now, it's easy to kind of, there are things like affiliate marketing and digital marketing and social selling. Some of them have MLM elements and have sort of changed a bit of the business model, but they all certainly share that promotion aspect where like Teresa is maybe has been paid to promote. I don't know if she had. I don't know if she posted an ad.
She probably doesn't know what it is, honestly.
Right. But like, it's all just about whether you can catch somebody thinking like, oh, wow, let me see what that is. But whether she knows that it is MLM is pretty funny. But some bloggers had picked it up and I just thought, oh, what a perfect little peg to talk to Gibson about my MLM book.
100%. Yeah. I was trying to think if like any of Reality Stars actual companies like were that model specifically, but I couldn't think of any. Is there one?
Well, so I do believe that at some point Whitney Rose's company Sold People was multi-level marketing structured or similar.
Okay.
And, you know, there are a lot of MLMs in Utah. It's very much a hotbed of MLM. And
I remember hearing that.
Made their state legislature even more amenable to MLM companies. And Mitt Romney, who, you know, has connections to Utah, he's a big MLM supporter in our federal government. But I think she actually is not affiliated with Soul People anymore, I believe.
That was the last thing that came out. Her business journey, honestly, because there's been a lot of rebranding and things.
So yes, there is a connection. And again, I think it makes a lot of sense. There's a connection between like this aspirational lifestyle, selling products, you know, using your platform. And I think the problem with it is I think the idea that everyone has an equal chance in doing that is a little bit of a pipe dream, that someone with not as many followers and not the platform can come in and also like sell this opportunity as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Whitney Rose wound down from Soul People. So
love that for her. Yeah. And for us.
But for her.
All right, Bridget, let's transition over to the Valley because I don't know about you, but
So much happening.
Has there ever been a darker show on Bravo?
Okay. No, the answer is no. And we've talked before. I feel such an affinity for the Valley folks because I did go spend 3 days with them to write that Vogue profile in 2018.
An iconic and piece of journalism.
I remember Brittany being so sweet and bubbly and just like lovely.
That was early Brittany years. That must have been like really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yes. They were filming the show titles. And so the Faith thing had not come out in our understanding, but they had filmed it.
Right.
So there was this big like breakdown in between the cast and no one really knew why because James had defended Faith. And so anyway, so it was like right around that moment where he first like really embarrassed her. So we didn't know the details yet, but then they came out in the season. So I think Jax must go. I'm fully in support of this behavior should not be platformed on reality TV. There is a line. He's crossed it. You know, it's interesting to think about if she has different feelings because this is his source of income. Like, I actually can understand why she's like, he can't leave or I don't want him to leave.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, she is clearly like so afraid of being around. Like, how can you film if she's afraid to be near him on a red carpet like she was over the premiere?
Oh, my God. No. And like, so, I mean, like for me, the line is the throwing of the coffee table that hit her. And
absolutely.
Like, I'm just 100%. Like.
And he punched a wall. Like, there were other things that came out.
Of course.
He punched a wall. He overturned. In his podcast, I feel like she's detailed that more, there was more.
Yeah.
And I do think there's something gross about the way they like unrolled his addiction on Alex Baskin's podcast and like that it felt Bravo sanctioned, even if they didn't mean to do that. I think that's a problem and they should kind of see how setting up his redemption arc already and then he goes on tour again. I think it's difficult for Bravo because I don't think Bravo has to do with the tour or the podcast.
No,
right? His
no.
podcast. I don't
but
think that's Bravo.
Alex Baskin's podcast. Yeah. Yeah. And I think
right.
that like.
And right.
Yeah. And Brittany says, you know, I made note of 33 times that he lied on that podcast. And it's like, that's the official Bravo podcast. Oh. And he's allowed to just sort of. It was
I
a second,
felt
his
for
second
her
appearance.
So much.
Me too.
Think about the idea that your ex can go on a podcast and lie about you, which I guess must happen all the time in reality TV. But like thinking about my exes, I'm like,
right.
Oh God, none of y'all had a podcast.
Right.
I would be so mad.
And it's also like, it just hammers home the idea that like, we've been through the cycle with him a million times where it's like, oh, I've done the work and I've changed. But then you watch the after show and you see the podcast things and you're like, no, you haven't. Like you have gotten on top of some of your substance issues and that's great. Like good for you. But like, you're still the same bad person that you are, and you treat everybody around you terribly. And I just don't believe that he's ever going to actually change. And I'm with you, but I don't think they'll do it in terms of kicking him off the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised at the way that the audience blowback has built, because I have been very cynical about audience blowback on Bravo because we've had so many people rehabilitated, so many, right. You know what I mean? Like, people, it really is a TV show. And that you and I feel like are on the same page at the end of the day that, like, these aren't our heroes and these aren't our political figures, and we can't, you know what I mean? We don't expect from them that they're going to deliver, just like any other celebrity. But I have, the fact that people really have just felt like they don't want to watch him. I think that's the thing that's interesting, because that is something that executives might listen to. It's not like a political outcry. It's more just like, we don't want to watch a show where this is being platformed, because unfortunately, a lot of women, I think, have experience with this. That's the other thing. It's like, it's so triggering to watch that for a lot of people. And they're just, it's not even like they want to take a stand or cancel him. They just might not want to watch.
Yeah, totally. It's there is an appealing aspect to car crash TV, but this is sort of a step further than that, and there's nothing appealing in it in watching him, essentially. And especially I think now that he is so Britney is finally separated from him in a real way, like, we can get Britney without Jax now. That is possible, and like, that is a great thing, because I do want to watch her. I want to watch her get her confidence back, essentially, and like, kind of continue to separate herself from him and sort of untangle some of the things that she clearly has to untangle because of being married to him and being with him for so long, you know?
I think Britney, when she finally writes a memoir, just based on that cut piece she wrote for us, actually her As Told To.
That was great.
I think it will be so interesting, because Britney really has lived so much of her life on this show, and really like coming to LA and being on the show right away. I mean, that she must be processing in real time how long she actually put up with Jax because of being on the show. And I think that's really toxic and scary and something to be aware of. And when, you know, when reality TV is your life and your income, I do think she will have a lot to say about the mixed incentives here and what that might have done to her decision making when she's figuring out, how do I leave when, you know, this show, like, I feel like we're weirdly seeing it, of course, extremely different in a microcosm, but Paige and Craig, like, that consideration of like, how do I leave? What do we do if our breakup is going to literally change our jobs? Like, oh my God, that took so much pressure.
Absolutely. And also, I think that's a really good through line. And I also think that, like, in that consideration is also, like you mentioned earlier, the blowback from fans and sort of like how the reaction to it, not just like job security and how many different paychecks you're getting, but also like, who's going to turn on me if I do this, and who's going to stick by me when I do this? And like, that's, I can't imagine what it's like to be in those positions where you're so scared of like literally millions of people like hating you because of XYZ.
Totally.
And I don't think people have hated Britney for ever separating from Jax, to be very clear, but you're still maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah. And then, you know, they had this show that came up, this second opportunity, and the show was about them. And I think that that probably also really put a ton of pressure on her. And if you believe him, they've been unhappy for so long, like, I'm sure that it put pressure on both of them to put on a happy face, which of course we saw. And then that's the weird double-edged sword where then the show actually helped expose that, right? Like the way he treated her last year and the alcoholism allegations and all that stuff and how just awful he was to her. Maybe it helped seeing that. I don't know. She would have to say, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think that her bringing up his coke addiction on camera this season unlocked a lot of that, honestly, for her. I sort of felt that energy. She's probably brought it up in private a million times, but her bringing it up on camera, knowing that she can't take it back, that pushes her down the road in terms of furthering the idea that she could actually truly separate from him and divorce him.
Yeah, and I think the fourth wall breaking there is just another like key moment in our, if Bravo, Bravo, fucking Bravo was like one pole in our, like, how we're literally sociology 101, understanding how reality TV is working. Like, this is another seminal moment for our scholarship to discuss and talk about, because it really is wild that that was, like, a form of protection for her. And then also, weirdly, an employment sort of, it really put it, like, his employment contract became an issue if, you know, anyway, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Michelle and Jesse, I'm curious how you are reading their situation this season as it's unfolding.
You know, I don't really like either of them, which helps because then I also kind of like both of them. So I feel really neutral. Someone was posting on Twitter all the different ways Michelle said threaten, because she said threaten, and threaten all in one episode, which I just think is really funny. She's, like, so pretty, and she's, like, Barbie doll-y that sometimes it's honestly, like, she's, like, short-circuiting. I really like, parts of her.
She has a robotic quality to her, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very soothing, weirdly. And Jesse is just, like, such a douche, but in a way that's so, like, douche-forward. You're kind of like, okay, well, I get what you're selling me, you know? But again, it's, like, amazing to see these people who, like, locked into a reality show who definitely probably hated each other last year when they did it. And it's amazing to, like, now they have this project together and you have to film with your ex. And Michelle saying, like, she wanted to kick Jesse out of the hotel, to me, definitely was also about filming, right? Because if she decided she didn't go, she wouldn't be on those episodes. So that's, like, so crazy that deciding to, like, maybe remove yourself for your mental health means you're not going to be on the episodes. Like, that's really an interesting balance. So you're really, like, encouraged to stay and interact with this, like, person that you actively hate and that was maybe going to bring your child to Newport. Like, she definitely, you know, in the real world wouldn't have gone. So it is this, like, surreal quality that, you know, this is just the magic of the Vanderpump crew that, you know, we can never recreate, because you just wouldn't do that unless you had those relationships that are authentic. And, you know, I think Southern Hospitality has this magic with it, because it also is so toxic. Like, Will and Emmy, if they leave, if Will doesn't film or something like that, like, she'll come back, I think, because those are her real friends, you know?
Right, right.
Even to get the check, I feel like she wouldn't just do it for the money. It's that combination of money, but also that those are your real friends. It's too hard. We've just we've reached peak TV. There's no more friend groups left.
But it's so...
or they're very few and far between.
And I think that's all totally accurate about the Valley. And, like, obviously what adds to the sort of stakes are the fact that they all have kids. And so it's just this, like, different...
Yes, that's a darkness.
And it's, like, kid forward, too. It's not like the Housewives. Like, I feel like the Housewives is even, like, less kid and family forward than the Valley is. Like, the Valley is these young families. And I think that adds to, like, it's like right... They're, like, right out of camera, like, all the time. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it really feels like. And we see Jesse and Michelle using Isabella as a pawn, like, in real time every single episode.
It does add to the darkness. It adds the darkness, but it also adds, unfortunately, to the, like, unputdownable quality of the train wreck, of the car crash. But yes, I do think that's why Southern Hospitality is, like, a breath of fresh, because we're just like, oh, we're having fun again. And they have time to clean up whatever messes they do.
There's nothing at stake here. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that show.
Me too. When you think about Michelle and Jesse, and because I feel like it's weird that the internet is, like, very pro Jesse, it feels like, almost. And
I haven't picked that up.
I think that they view it as, like, Michelle cheated once, and that sort of almost excuses his tormenting of her, essentially. That's sort of how I they're like, if the gender roles were reversed, if that was a woman, if the man had cheated once, we would have been, like, cheering her on to torment him, which, like, I don't know if I totally buy that. It's an interesting thing to posit, but I just feel like there's so much more to Jesse that's, like, bad that we just have, that's, it's hidden by his charm in ways.
Yeah. Well, and there's evidence she's admitted to cheating once.
So she's admitted to kissing somebody else. She says that the guy that she's with now, she has maintained.
The honey guy.
Yeah, the honey guy from Runyon Canyon, that she did not cheat with him. And then even on the after show this week, Jesse was like, or Walter Robbins Live, he said, I think they emotionally cheated. I know they didn't physically cheat. And she admitted to cheating once in the past, but I think that he's talking about the kissing that she has openly said.
Yeah.
So he has this thing where he throws things out there that are either jokes or rumors or like exaggerations of the truth. And I just don't know if I buy his story.
No, I think it's the opposite. I think Bravo fans just unfortunately have a higher tolerance for men being assholes. I do. I think that he has that dashing douchey.
Dashing douchey.
Quotient that Jax honestly had for so long where like, I do think Bravo fans go for women and go for like the shrew, the kind of that trope of like in a divorce or separation, like the woman. I think they want to champion women, but I do think there's also this like quickness to take them down if there's just like one little opening. And so if the cheating is like the little opening, I actually think Bravo fans are quicker to turn on women to me than they are
I think so too.
Like we saw that with Paige. I thought that the fact that all stemmed, in my opinion, from like Craig's one little sad video where he was like, hey guys, sorry it took me so long to say something. And people just like went for it that it was that something had happened. And then, of course, they both did things back and forth. But that was really the moment.
That
opened
the floodgates.
It was just one little like womp womp from Craig. You know, I think that I think Bravo fans see like a good looking guy in like a slightly too tight suit. And let him do whatever, unfortunately.
I think you're right. I don't know what's behind that, but I think you're right.
Misogyny, Gibson. Internalized misogyny.
Yes, there we go. When you did the Vanderpump Rules piece, Kristen was still in the picture, right?
With
the cast. Okay.
Big time. She was a friend though. Okay. And she got mad because she got mad about something. I referred to her as a friend accidentally, and she wasn't officially a friend. She was just like less episodes, maybe. There's something where, Kristen, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
But
we corrected it.
Having spent time with her in that era of her life and seeing what I think is a lot of growth, honestly, in her, like not complete growth, but like I do think that like she is the voice of reason on this show in so many more instances than I ever would have expected this season, I would say, not last season. What do you make of the trajectory of Christian Doty?
I think she's just a champion. I think she's a she's a queen. I've loved watching her. Speaking of a hero's arc, like,
yeah,
I think that her redemption speaks to the opposite of the dynamics we were just discussing, and the good in Bravo fans that allow people to redeem themselves and take them and really take them for at face value for their actions and what, you know, letting people grow on camera. I think she's like doing great. I mean, she's always had that magic, like suck a dick, Diana. Like she's she's so funny. I think she was really broken in ways that we didn't really know when all that stuff went down, and her and Jax, just like gross darkness. And like, I love that she seems like just really in control of herself and really loving herself. Like she's just got a lot of self-esteem in a way that it didn't feel like she had for so long. And I think Luke totally is part of that, but I don't think he's the reason that she's this way solely. It really feels like she did a lot of work in figuring out like, what are my priorities? Who am I? I love that she was ready to have a kid, even though, you know, she and Luke weren't necessarily ready to like get married at the time. I think she's been great. I've loved watching her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it speaks to the power of time away from the cameras to figure some of that stuff out.
Yes. Your theory that I think you're building.
I am. I like that. That's my book.
Of the year off, the gap year. The reality, the Bravo gap year is like
that's my torch to bear.
Theory. Truly.
But I agree. I don't think it's all Luke. I think he's a really good steady presence for her in a lot of ways. Not always steady, but even on this week's episode, he like opens the front of the party bus, starts to smoke, and he like gets out and like opens the hood of the car. He's like inspecting it, and it's like
right.
None of the other men could do that. You know what I mean?
No, he's doing his rugged mountain man thing. Yeah, I like him. But she totally, the gap year for her, I think, was great. And I also just think the way she handled the stuff that she was accused of and the racism stuff, like really honestly much better than Saucy did. I thought that the way she actually took accountability for it, I thought was like really admirable because she really actually said, like, this was harmful what I did and I wouldn't do it again. And I'm really sorry. Yeah, just there wasn't the same sort of like, I was canceled and like, wasn't that mean? And it was this era of like excess where everyone was getting canceled. Like, I don't think Kristen ever came and did that like retelling of the narrative where she was like kind of victimized by like the craziness of 2020. And I just respect that from her.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Totally valid.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Last couple I want to talk about with you, Bridget, is Danny and Nia, because I feel like the first season of The Valley, they were sort of the they didn't really have many. They're the unproblematic ones. They're the whatever. And like, they're still like kind of that way. But I just always am suspicious of a couple or somebody who like wants so badly to present like this like facade of perfection. And I think that some of her castmates are correct in sort of attributing that to her beauty pageant past. But he very clearly has some sort of issue with drinking. And every time he drinks, like, it's a thing. And the cast all knows it. And or some of the cast knows it. And some of the cast refuses to acknowledge it. And I don't know. It's this weird thing bubbling under the surface that is, it's showing itself. What are you making of how that's emerging?
So I don't think they are actual Disney bounders. Do you know what Disney bounders are?
I don't. Can you please explain?
Okay. Disney bounders are at Disneyland, you can't wear the costumes because the people who dress up are the official Disney characters and they, you know, charge people to take pictures with them and stuff. And it would just confuse things. So you're not allowed to dress up. So Disney bounders are people obsessed with Disneyland who go to Disneyland and figure out how to dress up in the essence of the characters. So they do these like Disney influenced fits, but not actual Disney costumes. And they also just like go to the parks all the time and post from the hotels. And they're like Disney influencers, basically. I don't think Nia and Danny are Disney bounders, but they remind me of Disney bounders and that everything is very Disney. Like part of that is Danny's job. And part of it is Nia being this like princess pageant. But like, to me, they're very just like, la, la, la. And everything is like perfect. And I totally agree that there's something lurking. I do think it's so interesting watching people go on reality TV and try to keep that up. Like, try to keep up the fact that you and your partner aren't, like, fighting in front of, like, a dinner with your parents. Why are you – the idea that you're going to go on TV and be filmed all the time and it's not going to come out. I mean, it's great for us to watch.
Totally.
It feels silly that they don't get it, but I do think the cracks are showing. And maybe it'll be good. Maybe they can actually move forward. I do think there's something weird there that she's like obsessed with having more babies and he clearly is sort of like not, and he wants to live somewhere else.
And I'm just like,
you guys have some stuff I'm dealing with. Obviously I'm gonna watch, but
of course
look up Disney bounding.
I've never heard that term before. And because he was on Watch What Happens Live with Jesse last night, and it was like they were talking about some scene that was sort of like a hot mic thing. I forgot what scene it was. But he was like, oh, I didn't think they would. I knew I was still mic'd, but I've been in the entertainment industry for 20 years, but I didn't think they would use that, you know, but, you know, I should know better. And it's like, he's so kind of in denial, I think, about the nature.
Was it the
nature.
The Jasmine thing and her wife or her girlfriend?
No, it was some, I forget. I wish I knew what scene.
Because that
was like,
thing also pissed me off when he sort of reacted to like, oh, you're trying to make a moment and oh, you're bringing this up. It's like, of course she's bringing it up.
It happened off. It happened between this, seasons.
Yeah, it happened off camera. But like, and that would really annoy me, obviously, if I was fighting with my friends and then months later they were bringing it up again. But
oh my God,
that's what you signed
that's
up
what you do.
For.
That's what happened to Emmy. That's what happened to Emmy and Will this past season of Southern Hospitality. You hold on to that. And also the way that like there's Nia and Danny were so dismissive this past week of like people bringing up the fact that he was wasted on this trip. In my mind, the reason why Jasmine is so pissed about this is like them being dismissive of him having any sort of issue is kind of inherently dismissive of him groping her when he was drunk on Halloween.
Yes. So like how messy he's getting is impacting other people and they don't want to acknowledge it. But that was just so annoying and funny
to me
that like he's acting like that was so out of pocket for her to do. It's like, of course she did that. And it's not to make a moment. It's because in reality TV world, if you don't address on camera, it's either because you're in cahoots with a friend like Dorit and Kyle trying to do that with Dorit before the reunion, which is why it was Kyle felt so betrayed when she exposed that text, right?
Right.
But like clearly people are doing that all the time. Like we're not going to talk about this fight we had because we're not going to give that narrative credence. And I'm sure I would do that with my friends or my partner if I was on reality TV. But like if it happened off camera, it didn't happen in the narrative. So if you want it included, even in just your relationship with somebody, you need to say it again.
Yeah, like 100%.
That's just like obvious.
Yeah.
We need to just bring him to reality TV school. And
I agree.
Give him some lessons.
He has too much experience in like legacy Hollywood. So, but maybe that's a good kind of person to add who's like not aware of how it works. You know what I mean?
Right. Legacy Hollywood and also just like the Disney Channel.
Exactly.
Zoey 101 or whatever it is. I'm just like. That would be
he was talking about his voice acting on the most recent episode, and it was like he was acting as if it's like him like playing like in an NFL game. He was like, it's tough work, man. Like it really takes it out of you. Like, and I was just like, I believe it's tough work. A lot of work is tough work. But that was them excusing him why he was so tired
for then getting to the vineyard.
and getting drunk.
I will say that I didn't read my own audiobook, and part of that is because truly the professionals are so much better and it is a lot of work. So I support that.
I believe it.
But yeah, I don't think my audiobook
it doesn't have a drinking issue. Exactly.
Right. Got drunk. Yeah.
Yes,
as far as I know, she didn't do that.
Well, Bridget, this has been so much fun. I'm so glad we were able to pop on. One of the best in the game.
With you.
Yeah.
Ugh, Gabbing with Gib is just taking off, and you're not beating the Speedo model allegations, I have to say. Brian
Moylan has thrown that out there, and it is sticking. So at some point,
it's sticking because it's if the Speedo fits.
If the Speedo fits, wow, Bridget.
It does.
Little Boss is everywhere at your books. It's again, you said it's right up a lot of the, I think, Bravo viewers' alleys. It's like it scratches the itch for a lot of people. And everyone should go get it.
Yeah, you can get it anywhere. Books are sold. There's an audiobook, like I said, and she's great, the reader. I think people will have fun with it. And thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thanks for doing this. You're the best. Bye.
Yay.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit theupsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.